obsessed with all things ovine, there is seriously something about sheep and always something new to learn about keeping, breeding and farming them. Welcome to the Sheep Show podcast. I'm Jill Noble from Holston Valley Farm and Sheep Stud and your host. The Sheep Show podcast exists to help you, no matter where you are in the world, what sheep you breed, what size your flock is. This podcast will help your sheep knowledge and your shepherding confidence grow. And it's a two-way street. I love to hear from you and find out how your sheep journey is going. Contact me via Instagram at Holston Valley Farm or via email jill@holstonvalleyfarm.com.au. Come along on this episode as we explore the amazing world of sheep and sheep farming together.
Series coming for you on drenching, probably the biggest challenge that most of us face when we're producing sheep. Really should say a series on worms more broadly, more parasites or internal parasites. And starting today with probably what is the biggest challenge for me personally on my farm. And I'm going to share with you some of the learnings as always, and that is Barber's pole worm. So an internal parasite in sheep, particularly when we have warm and wet weather, which is perfect conditions for Barber's pole. And that's exactly what we've had this year. So and exactly what I've sort of seen. I didn't do as much preventative as I would normally have done. I didn't order my Barber Vax in time, so wasn't able to fully get the benefit of that, which is such a shame and a huge learning. I've been using that pretty consistently for the last three or four years and had really, really good success. And that was something I didn't fully get the benefit of this year because I didn't have enough supply. So that's been a real challenge for me, and definitely something that I know I can improve on. Very, very easy fix. And when you think about it, oh, you get a bit complacent after a while and you think, oh, yeah, you know, I don't have that issue anymore. It's just because you've been doing too many preventative things that actually have stopped that issue from coming around. Anyway, let's talk more about learnings in just a second. But just to remind you, in case you've missed it, what actually are Barber's pole worms, and why is it even called Barber's pole in the first place? So they are a very vicious, voracious, blood-feeding, blood-sucking worm that actually suck the blood from the lining of the stomach of sheep and goats as well, and basically cause anemia, so blood and iron deficiency. The worms are, the actual worms are about 2.5 centimeters long. Why they're called Barber's pole worm is because they actually look like a barber's pole. So they're like a normal little sort of squiggly little worm looking like thing, just like a normal earthworm, 2.5 centimeters long, by the way. But they have red and white stripes around their body. And the actual stripes are the Barber's pole worms' reproductive organs and digestive tract. And their digestive tract is full of blood. And it's all wrapped around each other. So that's why they're called Barber's pole worm. If you're interested, the actual scientific name is Humongous contortus. Yeah, contortus meaning contorted or twisted. So humongous is often what a vet would call it. It's those sorts of things. With this particular worm, as I mentioned, the perfect conditions are quite unusual in terms of hot and wet. So dew in the morning, even if it's not been raining, for example, rain areas, but then, you know, summer storms, those sorts of things, all making perfect conditions for Barber's pole worm. Basically, when I say perfect conditions, it means that they multiply really, really fast. It takes about 21 days for this particular worm to mature. And then it's 3 to 6 weeks after the rain event that we can actually see the signs of the impact of the worm on the sheep. I particularly find that my ewe lambs are most vulnerable, but you know, all sheep are potentially vulnerable, but older sheep tend to have developed resistance, or because they're more mature, unless they're lactating or pregnant, which is unusual for Barbara's pole worm in our conditions anyway, because we're generally lactating and pregnant in winter. So generally colder conditions don't multiply the worm as much. It can still be there, but it's not multiplying, it's not thriving as much. The other thing that will actually get rid of Barbara's pole worm, which I'll talk about in a second, are other different weather conditions. So we'll come back to that as well. So what happens in terms of the Barbara's pole life cycle? And it's a very complex life cycle, but the adult worms lay their eggs in the fourth stomach. If you think about sheep having four compartments of their stomach, so the adult worm lay eggs in the fourth stomach. And the female is particularly prolific, sometimes up to 10,000 eggs per day that the female is actually hatching or depositing onto pasture. And the eggs are come out in the feces and hatch, feces of the sheep, that is, and then hatch within a few days. And then the larvae emerge within those favorable conditions, and then they just sort of hunt around and lurk around in the pasture. And then, of course, the larvae are things that are eaten by the sheep when the sheep actually grazes. And then in the sheep's gut, the larvae develop into adult worms again in that 3-week cycle or 21-day cycle. So that's the cycle that actually happens. So we've actually got sort of six stages, if you like, of the life cycle of a Barbara's pole worm. And they do tend, they can move up the grass a little bit as well. So it can be really kind of annoying. Mind, it's a round worm, if you're interested. And there is definitely a very negative impact on goats. And there's a minor crossover into cattle as well. So it's a little bit of a crossover there. So typical round worm life cycle, like I've described there. And the adult worm that I mentioned, the adult Barbara's pole worm, can actually remove a huge amount of blood from a sheep every day. So if you can imagine, one adult worm can remove a large amount of blood, so that if there is a high or significant worm burden, it can rapidly cause anemia and death as well. Yeah, and the sort of magic number we're looking for is 500 worms present in the actual animal. So if you do a fecal worm egg count and you're seeing 500, that's really where you're thinking that's going to negatively impact that particular animal. And of course, it's going to cause the signs that a lot of you have probably seen already with Humonkus, which is that a lethargy. Think of anemia just like in a human. We're tired, we don't have any energy, we're not going to be able to run. We'll be able to sort of move around, but any sort of pressure or stress that's caused on the body is going to impact us. So we're not going to be brisk and sort of healthy. And other things that can show could be that concept of the pale membranes, pale eyelids, pale gums, because the blood is being sucked. The other thing you might see is bottle jaw as well, the swelling on the jaw, and that's due to loss of blood protein. So again, you see that swelling around the jaw, and that is often another feature. That often is a feature of what we call subacute Barbara's pole, which is sort of one that takes a longer time to develop, whereas when you have acute, it's faster, and then you'll see more deaths. Neither are good, by the way, but still. And the trick here is, and a lot of sort of myths around sheep, is that sheep equals diarrhea or dags or dirty bums. You're not going to see that unless you've got other worms, okay? And if you have other worms, then you might see those sorts of symptoms as well. So the concept here is that to really deal with the Barbara's pole worm, you've got to treat it like a different worm, not necessarily like a other worm, like a brown stomach worm or whatever it might be. Queen Barbara's pole worm and other round worms is that in Barbara's pole, I mentioned to you how prolific they are. They have a very high fecundity, very short life cycle, a high degree of genetic variation, And they basically reproduce very, very quickly. And not all roundworms or other roundworms don't tend to do this. So then other roundworms tend to cause ill threat, but not necessarily death. So this is where we need to really be careful when we treat or deal with barber's pole. They're very adaptive, they develop very rapidly, and they develop resistance very rapidly as well. So this is where one of the biggest challenges that we have is in definitely in Australia anyway, and I'm sure you've seen it overseas, where we have constant issues with barber's pole worm. Some of them even do survive colder winters and things like that, but we know that there are some conditions that kill them, which I'm going to talk to you a little bit about as well. So we know that it can be actually not just a summer parasite, it can actually be a winter parasite too, that can cause a bit of an issue or result in, again, some of the challenges and problems that we have with barber's pole worm. Some of you might be familiar with the Famacha method. So I'll just talk to you a little bit about that. And it's a little card that you can look at or download or I think purchase, and it allows you to sort of measure the color on that card with the membrane, so the eyelids and gums, to determine the need to drench. And that can help you see how pale the animal's membranes actually are. Because sometimes you think, oh, it's pale, or is it just sort of peachy or whatever, you know? So like, but if you've seen it before, you probably will get used to what you need to see anyway. I haven't personally used it once, I think, but just to sort of do a bit of a comparison, what I think is pale. So just about that, and that allowed me to just do a little bit of a comparison, a bit of a benchmark, and then from that I can use that moving forward along the way to help me sort of really make a decision on when to drench and when not to drench as well. Okay, so let's talk then a little bit about the things that I've learned this particular season. I had a real aha moment recently where I realized that it was the same paddock that was causing me the problems. Okay, so let me just explain a little story. So when we lamb, I have particular paddocks that I generally use to lamb in. When I wean, I generally have paddocks that I use to wean in. And then when my lambs get older and more independent, and when my lambs are perhaps, you know, what I would call fully weaned and doing really well, then I send them further and further away into further and further paddocks from the what we call the home zone, you know, which is sort of a series of paddocks that, you know, we can easily get feeders to, we can easily bring out feed to, and so on. And I have been, if you've listened to some of my other podcasts, particularly some of the subscription ones, I've been talking about sort of changes that I've made with my weaned animals, my weaned lambs, and using a pellet. So check that out if you haven't checked that out already. And all of this happened when I sort of moved my animals away from the home zone to an area that isn't as accessible to get a lick feeder there or a grain feeder there, so they weren't on that feed, so nutrition had dropped as well. It's like a recipe for disaster, you know. So when nutrition drops, that can allow, or the animal can be more vulnerable, more susceptible. And I don't know what was going on, but probably left them in that particular paddock too long. But the thing I've really realized is that when you have high temperature days, I think 38 plus days, which actually we had yesterday, believe it or not, here, which is like one in probably the last 4 years. When you have those days, it will kill off a lot of the larvae that are on the ground, the barber's pole larvae, yeah, that are on the ground. So frost, snow, hot weather, that will kill it. So that will actually reduce the population. That's really good news. And I was even saying yesterday, oh, the only good thing about this, you know, 38, 39 degree day is that it's going to kill some barber's pole worm. And then I thought to myself, hang on, not if the sun doesn't reach the ground. So the sun actually has to reach the ground. And it was probably like 28 in the shade. It was beautiful in the shade for Barbara's pool. And what I realized was that this paddock that I was particularly using when I sent my lambs off to sort of fend for themselves without any additional feed, without any sort of additional care, when they were that old, that was my most wooded paddock. So it was a paddock, it grows lots of grass. It's a very reasonably big paddock. I don't know, it's probably 15 acres maybe even more. And it wasn't overcrowded or anything like that. So they had plenty to eat. There weren't, you know, huge amount of lambs in there per acre. They weren't in there for all that long, but it never will kill off. This is my problem. This is what I've realized. It doesn't. It's a paddock that does not get this the quantity of sun exposure to be able to kill off the Barbara's pole worm living in the ground. And hence, this is the paddock that I need to avoid. I know, maybe, hopefully this will help you if you're in a sort of situation like this and you're thinking, oh, I never thought of it like that. The other paddocks that I really need to avoid in the cycle, like I really shouldn't put lambs in there ever. Yeah, it's a perfect paddock for them. It's nicely wooded, it's shaded, there's lots of nice feed. But you know what? I should be using that or change up my system, using that for different animals. I've got cattle, so they're actually in there right now trying to hoover up all the Barbara's pole, which hopefully will help for next season. But I could use that for older sheep, yeah? Or I could only put animal lambs in there if I top their nutrition up, if I find a way to get additional feed to them so they're healthier, they're able to sort of manage that, or as I have been doing in the last couple of years, using my Barbara's wax. Barbara's wax. Now, Barbara's wax I know is available in Australia. It's also available under a different name in wire vax in South Africa, if you're in South Africa. So it is available, but you can think about it. If it's not available in your country, then do lobby any of your agricultural ministers or any of your department or extension officers, things like that, to see what they can do about encouraging or potentially in including that in your suite of products that you have available in your particular country. Because we know that this is such an issue for us, and we know that we want to have every tool available for us as much as we possibly can. And the thing with the Barbara's pole vaccination, if you haven't, go check out the podcast I did with David Smith from the Morden Institute in Scotland. What they do is they have actually developed the first vaccine in the world for an internal parasite by taking an enzyme from the stomach of the actual Barbara's pole worm, from the digestive tract of the Barbara's pole worm. And that vaccine then contains the proteins from the lining or the stomach. And then when the Barbara's pole worm in the animal drinks the blood, they drink the antibodies, or they drink that particular vaccine, if you like, and it attaches to the stomach lining of the worm, starving the worm, actually preventing digestion. And as a result, we know that I mentioned earlier, the female produces so many eggs, like 10,000 eggs a day. They actually are able to, they produce fewer eggs, and they eventually die off. So they're still there. They're still in the system, but they're not causing the problems that we've just talked about. You know, this high reproduction, and then therefore shedding lots and lots of eggs and lots of larvae, and then creating this huge issue that we have to deal with, that we've been talking about. Now, when I say this year has been difficult, yes, it's been difficult. I've seen signs. I've had bottle jaw, but I did lose one lamb, but I think this was didn't look like a Barbara's pole candidate. It was a bigger lamb, and it got stuck between a fence and a water trough, and it was a bit sort of twisted when I found it. I think it just got stuck. So just one of those things. So I'm thinking here, I haven't, touched wood, I haven't lost or had any losses. I've managed it. They did have a couple of vaccines, but I could have done more. They did have very good nutrition, which was good, and I was very happy with that. This was my lambs this season, but this is my problem paddock. So I really need to think about either not putting animals in there when they're potentially going to be vulnerable, not these particular vulnerable animals at a vulnerable time in their life. Number one, I need to get on to next year ordering. I'll actually do it now because it can take a while for it to happen. So I will do it now, knowing that I'm going to need my first Barbara's vax. I've just joined, by the way, just joined my use. Knowing that I'm going to need my first Barbara vax injection in September. So I'm going to do it now. I'm going to get onto it now, get it all sent out now. The only challenge that I have now is that it's quite hot in the weather-wise, and Barbara's pole needs to be refrigerated. So it is better if the weather is a little bit cool. So it is going to be cool over the next couple of weeks. So maybe I'll order it then and have it. And then I have it at the ready. The other thing is, if you have it at the ready, you can actually use it on your animal straight away. It's easy when you do it. I find it really easy to use when you're marking because they need at least 3 doses and then 1 dose every 6 weeks if you need to. So if you find the conditions are there. So I find I give the first meal at the 4 week marking, the second meal at the 6 week marking or the second marking, and then the next meal at weaning, which generally is, within a reasonable time period. And that works really, really well. That peak sort of parasite season is sort of to come. So then they're set up for the next 6 weeks and then just one little meal jab and then they're fine for the rest. So I do rotationally graze. I do cross graze with other animals, particularly in areas that I use for quarantine. So I often use the horses, which are really, really good at cleaning infested pastures. So all that's really good. All those benefits, but I really think I need to think here long and hard about being able to make sure that the pasture that I use is pasture that gets sun exposure and therefore the pasture that will be able to give me the maximum reduction in worms. Okay, now let's just have a quick chat about drenches. I've got lots of stuff coming up on drenches for you over the next couple of weeks, but I really want you to think about what we call a narrow spectrum drench. If you are going to drench for Barbara's pole, then you really need to think about using a narrow spectrum drench because they have an active ingredient which is called clazantel. And that is the drench that will really be effective against Barbara's pole worm. Now, I'll just give you some brand names. I mean, they're going to be called different things in different countries and so on, but some brand names just to help you. And the challenge with these narrow spectrum drenches is they're not going to be the ones that you'll find in the average produce store over the counter. With the narrow spectrum, they're very, very specific. I've been using clazantel this particular year, and I found that very good. In the past, I've used Genesis Extra, expensive, but good, very good. And Avamec Jewel, I've used that. Clozamax is another one. I haven't used that. Clozacare. And then there is Sepinvair and Sustain, all these sort of brand names. And then there's a few others that I actually haven't heard of, which are Combat, Pole Vault, and Ramitin. Anyway, there you go. There's some names. The other one you could use is Amoxidectin as well. That could actually work as well. So you want to really think about using a narrow spectrum drench. And this really helps with reducing worm resistance. Now we know that there is drench resistance, worm resistance for all drenches. But if you know the worm you've got, you use the drench you need, and you use it only on the animals that need it, so creating what's called refugia. Talk about that more in some other podcasts. Refugia. So it's almost like a habitat for the worms. Kind of weird. So basically you say you don't drench everything. Then you are going to help to reduce this challenge or problem that we have with resistance or drench resistance with worms. Barbara's pole particularly seem to have developed drench resistance to ivermectin and can really cause a bit of a problem. So there's lots of things there as well. The other thing that with these drenches is that they are very long acting. So the other thing that I find is really easy to understand about drenches, if you look at the bottle and it says, 7 days, or it says like 91 days or 42 days, then you know the protection you're getting. So like a drench that has 7 days protection, is that going to do Barbara's call? No, this is a 21-day life cycle. It is not going to do all stages of the life cycle of the Barbara's Pole worm. It's just simply not going to manage that. So for some of these drenches, you are looking at very, very long withholding period, and there's a long, what's called a long acting drench, and that's really what you want to get. So you want to get a drench that's going to actually give you a huge amount of protection, and that's going to give you the most confidence, I suppose, moving forward with your drench. So that's really what we're wanting to get. Yeah. So if you think about something like Fasantel that I mentioned, it's got a sustained action. It's got the Clasantel ingredient. It's a medium spectrum drench. Yeah. And if you actually think about then, it's got a 28-day withholding period and even a trade export slaughter interval of 60 days. So, it's a long acting drench. And that's really what we're wanting to do. It offers 4 weeks protection against reinfestation of Barbara's pole worm and protects against pasture contamination for 6 weeks. That's pretty serious. Yeah, that's pretty serious. And that's really what we're wanting to get to. Yeah. So that's where you really need to think that not all drenches are created equal. Yeah. And if you know you have a particular issue with a particular worm, then you've got to narrow it down and try to manage those sorts of elements. So you want reinfestation protection, and you want to be able to get that protection of contamination from worm eggs of up to several weeks, way beyond the life cycle of the actual worm. And I suppose the proof really is in the pudding from my point of view. You've got some options. You could continue to drench once, drench twice, drench three times, and some drenches will say, re-drench after blah, blah days. That's because the drench doesn't give you long-acting protection. It doesn't give you that reinfestation protection. It doesn't give you the protection of those eggs on the ground as well. Now, Clasantel will do other things as well. It can be very good if you've got liver fluke and so on, so it can be useful. But again, really, really good for Humongous contortus, for Barbara's pole worm. But again, you've got to really think about using it only when you need it. Like, I wouldn't be doing it if you know that it's not Barbara's pole season in your environment or whatever it might be, because it's just going to create resistance and things like that. It also does nasal bot too, if you're interested too. So Barbara's pole, liver fluke, nasal bot. So let's just summarize here. Barbara's pole problem. Yeah. Solution, multifaceted. Clean paddocks, high nutrition, sun on the paddock, not wooded paddock, where this lovely little worm will find little nooks and crannies to hide in and then come out. Really being aware of the weather conditions that are going to negatively or could negatively impact this particular the sheep or the worm growth and the fecundity of the worm and the reproduction of the worm in this particular environment. And then the right drench for the right issue at the right time, possibly with Barbavax or Wirevax, which can give you protection as well. So hopefully that's helped you a little bit. I know it's helped me to really talk to you about this and sort of consolidate it and really bring to you that sort of the biggest learning I've had so far without any losses, which again, in my book, is always a good thing, because You don't really want any of those. You know, I do have to deal with sick, a few sick, ill thrift, lethargic animals. So I've had two, maybe three. So it's not bad in like 150 lambs. But it would be better if I didn't have any. And I could have prevented it had I been a bit more onto it, had I been a bit less complacent, had I kind of thought my little lambs were invincible, I should have been a bit more onto it. And I should have probably realized that that wooded paddock is not the best environment for animals who are potentially the most vulnerable on my farm at the most vulnerable time to the most prolific worm. So big learning, some great steps for moving forward with my animals, and really some things to think about for next year. And I hope this has given you a few little extra things to put into your little ammunition of tricks to help you combat the dreaded sheep parasite. Have a sheepy.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Sheep Show podcast. Please take a moment to share this episode via your podcast app, email, or social media channels. Each share helps us reach listeners just like you who can benefit from our sheep-focused content. Let me know how your sheep journey is going. Contact me via Instagram at Holston Valley Farm or via email, jill@holstonvalleyfarm.com.au. Until next time, sheep well.